November 28th, 2007. It's the Lullabot Podcast.
Lullabot Podcast.
Hi, it's Jeff Robbins, and it's episode 51 of the Lullabot Drupal Podcast. This week, Jeff Eaton, James Walker, and I interview Ed Sussman, who is the president of Mansueto Digital. They run the Inc. magazine and Fast Company websites, and they're doing some really cool stuff with Drupal. They're also hiring, so listen on for that part if you're looking for Drupal work. Lullabot has Drupal workshops coming up in Portland, Oregon, the first week of January, January 7th through 11th. We're teaching two workshops. The first is Introduction to Drupal Development, basic Drupal API understanding. And the second workshop is Advanced Drupal API and Module Building stuff. You can find out more information about all of that at lullabot.com/training. There are also early bird discounts through December 5th, and it's selling quickly already, so sign up soon. All right, now on to our interview. Ed Sussman, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, Jeff, how are you?
I'm great. So we've been doing some work with you guys and in the full disclosure arena that we work together, but we still think that there could be some stuff that it'd be really of use to people listening to the podcast, sort of hearing about how Drupal is deployed and sort of how you grow Drupal on the level of what you guys have been using it for over there. Your company is called Mansueto Digital. Is that correct? It's not
right.
We talk about right. It as like Fast Company or Inc. What's the relationship between those things? Can you just sort of define the terms?
Yeah, we're owned by a guy named Joe Mansueto, and Joe Mansueto is the founder of a company called Morningstar, which does financial ratings of mutual funds. And when Joe brought his company public about 2 years ago, he became a multi-billionaire, and one of the things he did with his money was buy Inc. and Fast Company magazines. What Mansueto Digital is we're the digital arm. So we run fastcompany.com and inc.com and a technology site called inktechnology.com. And you guys are working with us on a couple of things. There's a new site called inkbiznet.com, which is a database and business network for private companies, and then a total revamping of fastcompany.com on Drupal, which is probably the bigger, exciting project that we can really dig into. Oh, there's one other thing I should mention. Fast Company has, as part of its website, something called the Company of Friends, which some of your listeners might know about. It's actually, so far as we can tell, it's the first online business network, actually one of the first online networks, period. It was started in November of 1997, so it's 10 years old, and still has more than 100,000 people who use it. So it's an online business network for fans of Fast Company, and that's one of the things that we're going to be leveraging to get our community up and running and thriving on Fast Company again.
Cool. And so what's your position at Mansueto?
So I'm the president of Mansueto Digital, which means that we've got our own little business unit here. And so we run the technology department and the sales department and editorial. And so we have our own little subsidiary company within the larger company, and the larger company is the print magazines, and we also run some big conferences.
So what's your like background on and with the web? Obviously, as the president of this stuff, you've got some experience, but sort of what are the series of events that find you where you
well,
are?
I started, so I've been doing this for 4 years. I've been I've had different titles here, managing director, and I don't know, maybe one or two other titles, executive vice president. But so I've been the digital group here. I've been running for about 4 years, and before then, I was a journalist. So I was the executive editor of Inc. magazine. But I've always had an entrepreneurial streak, and I started a magazine called Justice in the 90s, which didn't last very long. And I started a website called JD.com, also in the late 90s. It's a legal matching service. So I've had an interest in startups and the web. And so when the digital division was looking for someone to lead it. Actually, this is one of those stories like how Dick Cheney became vice president. He was in charge of the search committee for George Bush for who should be his vice president. So I was on the search committee for our old company as to who should be in charge of the websites. So we went through about 50 resumes and interviews, and I said, "How about me?" So.
I've read all these resumes, and I'm better than all of them.
it was pretty much one of those stories. Yeah. So, at that particular time, we were really small. When I started, there were five of us, and so now there's 40 of us, and the company's like six times bigger online. So suddenly it looks like, wow, you're running this sort of big web operation, 40 people and millions of dollars of revenue. But we're kind of, I hit a good lucky stride because we had some really good years again in 2004, 5, and 6. So we'll see. 7's been okay. Things are getting a little slow. That's not really a Drupal broadcast, but the economy's a little slow right now.
Yeah, we'll weather it. We have in the past.
That's right.
It's no Web 1 bubble.
No, it's not a bubble at all. It's just kind of like so from my perspective, and I get to see it really closely. It's, are we going to grow 30% this year, or are we going to grow 50%? And so we got accustomed to growing 50%. And next year, are we going to grow, 15 or 20%, or are we going to grow 40%? So how big is the boom going to be? It's a slowing of still rapid growth.
Right.
And so in the context of Drupal, I think that means that, in terms of Drupal developers and Drupal sites, I think the demand is going to remain pretty intense.
Yeah. Well, I mean, certainly you have to compare those two graphs. I think, yeah, certainly some of the like digital boom or sort of second digital boom is starting to level off, yet the Drupal curve seems to be just growing exponentially. And so I don't know that we in the Drupal world are going to really see too much leveling off per se. At least that's been my experience. So,
So
let's talk a little bit more about Drupal. How is it that you find yourself on a Drupal podcast? How did you end up choosing Drupal, and maybe how'd you first discover it?
Okay, so we knew that we didn't want to stick with this custom piece of software that we had built in-house for company of friends, this old platform that's about 6 years old. Part of what we do at Fast Company is cover technology and new media, so it was not very hard for us to network out into the technology world and, narrow down the different platforms. Now, we started out with a wide open canvas, so we were looking at closed platforms, and we looked at Pluck, and we looked at People Aggregator, and we looked at .NET solutions, and then we looked at open source solutions. We looked at Ruby on Rails, and things kept coming along, pointing back to Drupal. And there were a few things.
What problem were you trying to solve at that point? It was specifically sort of for starting to port over this old stuff that you had?
Yes, but we knew we wanted to do so much more with it. We knew that we wanted to create a fully integrated publishing community platform for Fast Company. That was the first goal. So we have first-class journalism. We have a group of journalists here from every alumni of every major publication from the New York Times and Fortune and the Wall Street Journal. And so very, very serious first-class journalism operation here. And also some pretty progressive thinking, plus some money in our pockets because of our new owner, revolves around how can we take this first-class journalism and do more with it than just publish the same stuff that's in the magazine online. And, you know, and we have a group of a dozen online journalists who do things like podcasts and video and discussion boards and such. But it just wasn't enough. It wasn't satisfying. And so about a year and a half ago, we said, we sat down and we started really looking at our options. And the one thing that we kept coming back to is we wanted to break down the barrier between the community and the publishing. So we have all of this great content that our readers are creating for us. And our readers are some of the same people that we write about. So all these really smart professionals, all these really smart people in the technology world, all these really smart new media people. And a lot of them meet every single month. There are these Company of Friends chapters all around the world that have been meeting once a month for 10 years. So here they are publishing all of this great material, having all of these great meetings, and nobody gets to access it or appreciate it other than a few people in the group. Even sharing material between the different groups on Company of Friends was not something that was happening. So, you know, and the other thing is that we felt like the Company of Friends groups were not benefiting from the latest discussions and the latest thinking from our own journalists. So they would get the issue of the magazine, but they weren't engaged in enough of a dialogue with us either. So it was just sort of this, there was this bolt-on community, and then there was the magazine. How could we bring them both together? And we sat down and we decided to solve that problem first from a conceptual point of view before we chose our actual software platform. And so we worked with a company, a really smart group of three people called Bond Arts and Sciences. They're three. They're like everybody else. They're growing like crazy. They're like 30 of them now, a year and a half later. And we broke it down into every single element. We really got granular with it. And we just thought, how can we bring this discussion that takes place really to the fore? And so we was like, well, you know, we know our members want a blog. So how prominent do we want those blogs to be on the site? We know our members are participating in conference calls, and we know our members are meeting in person. How do we bring those to the site? We know that our members want to network with each other. You know, are they finding each other in an efficient enough way? We know that we're proposing all sorts of great ideas every month for people to consider, but are we getting back the feedback and channeling it through the site in an efficient way? And so we kind of lived in that world for a good 6 months. And, I wish we had thrown in some developers to that mix as well. The Bond people were information architects and designers, and they did they're all ex-Razorfish people. And the chief information architect there, Karen McGrain, she had just come off of doing the New York Times redesign website, and she did a really, really nice job there, I thought. So, you know, we had really first-class thinker and really immersed ourselves and created this very elaborate 150-page, fully annotated set of wireframes. We had some fans of our wireframe. Are there any? Jeffrey?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It was one of the most impressive and detailed wireframe documents I'd ever seen, with like addendums that like explained, no, here's how tagging works, you know, and stuff like that.
Yes, legendary wireframes. Yeah.
They're fantastic. Yeah. Well, they've become the Bibles for the projects. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so we really invested a lot of intellectual energy. It was one of those things where we had big conferences twice a week. We would sit around with eight of us, and we would really go at it, and we whiteboarded everything, and we spent a lot of time thinking about it. I think we came up with, you know, the development cycle has been slow, and we'll talk about that. one of the things that happened is we got to a point. I didn't know these words back then, but I guess we were doing a waterfall development process, and we should have been doing an agile development process. But so we got to this point after 6 or 7 months where we said, "Oh yeah, that's pretty cool. Let's build it now." It's like, okay, pause.
And this was all pre Drupal decision.
Yep. Wow. That's right. It's just pause, and it's kind of like, okay, now we spent 4 months, 3 or 4 months, then trying to figure out what platform are we going to build it on and who's going to build it. And, you know, even once we chose Drupal, there was who in Drupal. Mm-hmm. So, but there was a lot to get through before we got to we're choosing Drupal. I mean, we had a look at Ruby on Rails, and is, hey, what about those scaling issues on Ruby and, you know, people aggregator, and, you know, can we really count on Mark Cantor? He's a great guy, but is he really going to be around for the next 10 years? You know, we love Mark.
I'm not even going to comment on that.
No, I love Mark. I love Mark, but, you know, people aggregator is him and a few people. So, you know, as elegant as it is that something that you can really count on? It's a proprietary system. And the .NET solutions, well, you know, we're more of a PHP shop, and in the spirit of, there was something about what we were doing with as a community platform and a new media and a technology site, and really Fast Company, I should take a step back, is a magazine about innovation. Inc. is a magazine about small business, but at its core, the type of small businesses that read it are the more innovative ones, because they're trying to grow. They're trying to learn how to be a really good business. They're generally not mom and pops. They're the businesses that are thinking of themselves as, you know, the future stars and some of the current stars. So those are the people who are using Inc. Your business manager, Liza, is a big fan of Inc. magazine, and I think if she weren't, we would never have got you guys to help us, because you were certainly overbooked at the time we called you. But Liza liked Inc. so much. So we have these magazines that are about innovation, and we have this software solution we're looking for that we don't always have to choose the most innovative software solution just because you're writing about innovation. But in this case, it really made sense for us to walk the walk. And there were a few things. One is we wanted to control our own destiny. We didn't want any single person or company with a proprietary system to be able to say to us, you know what, we've decided that we're not going to release that piece of functionality that you've been waiting for this year. We're going to release it next year instead. You know that friends of friends things that you were waiting for? You know, we're not going to do that. So that's pretty unacceptable when you're running an entire business around a website where you want to choose the functionality. And then also we wanted to be able to own it internally. So yes, you know, we've used a lot of outside help to get this thing built, but eventually we intend to, and that's one of the things we're going to talk about, but we intend to take over a lot of it or most of it in-house. That's a real important goal for us. And again, just can't do that with a proprietary system. And then, so there were a whole bunch of, so yeah, so that got us really excited about open source. And then with Drupal in particular, it was just obvious when we started looking at the growth curve of the number of developers who were joining the ranks of different open source movements that Drupal is where the action was. I mean, the number of modules that were being created and the number of interesting things that you could do, especially with social networking, and also, you know, we're a big website. We can get into the numbers, but we're a big website supporting more than 1 million visitors a month on Fast Company, on Inc. We're doing probably about 600,000 to 700,000 visitors a month. Those are our internal numbers. So we needed something that was scalable and that had good performance. And there's a lot of money and a lot of jobs at stake. It's not a startup. So, you know, we can't have a website that's crashing all the time. We have lots of big advertisers, they wouldn't stand for it. So, you know, we needed something that was all of these things: open source, yet robust, growing. We'd be able to own it. We'd have a great deal of flexibility in terms of how we could develop upon it, and also had enough of a track record with scalability and performance that we had some confidence that it could run some really robust functionality. And if we're right, it's going to the number of people using it is only going to using the sites are only going to increase. So you know, we have to anticipate just a lot of traffic and visitors. And so anyway, hey, did we make the right choice? We haven't launched yet.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's we can certainly talk about that. So
you're talking to the wrong group to get an objective opinion on that.
You've definitely had some frustrations along the way, and then there's been some areas that have been easier, and we can talk about all that in a moment as well. But so, what are the sites that you are building and have built with Drupal?
Well, inkbiznet.com is the one that has already launched, and I would say it's about half, maybe even a third of where we want it to be, but it's doing a lot now, but we want it to do so much more. Inkbiznet is a place where any private company can come and establish a profile about their company and get really, really deep into it. So I would say we're competing with a service out there called Hoovers, but Hoovers prepares its company profiles using a large staff of both U.S. and offshore researchers. And we just came to the conclusion that if you're going to be tracking several million private companies, it's not realistic to do all of that work in depth with paid researchers. We've lived in this data for many, many years because we've had to use it, and we just find it unreliable. And so sounds kind of counterintuitive, but if we get the users to do the work for us by filling out these company profiles, we're more likely to get accurate information. We're more likely to get information that's continually updated. And also, we can be more robust and in-depth by giving them the tools to really tell the world about themselves. So it's a B2B directory where companies can promote themselves to the world, and then they can connect with each other. And as part of promoting themselves to the world, they can tell us about who they are, who their executives are. They can give us all of their latest press releases, which we distribute on a feed that goes out to Inc.com and is going to starting to get distributed all over the web. Because we have partnerships with Yahoo and Fox and Reuters and AOL. So it's a way for private companies to get their press releases distributed everywhere. We give everyone a blog tool. One of these days we'll be able to let them export and import their blogs onto their regular websites too. So it ties into their Inc. Biznet. So cool. That's
wow. Just the press release aspect of it is a really sort of killer feature, isn't it? I mean,
yeah, it's cool. I mean, that so there we're competing with PR Newswire and another company called Business Wire, which I think Warren Buffett owns Business Wire, so we'll see whether we can take on Warren Buffett. But that's a business where traditionally you have to pay between $100 and $200 to get a press release distributed.
Right.
So we're going to charge nothing. We're currently charging nothing, and you can post your press release. You have to be a private company. It's not for individuals. So we have we're actually turned down as many people. We're turned down a lot of people who are applying who aren't actually incorporated. So this is not for individuals. This is for companies. So, and we have a screening process, and you have to be incorporated somewhere in the United States. One of these days, Canada, James. We'll move to Canada, but just for right now, just the United States. And you have to be incorporated. And then, but if you're incorporated, we're serving advertising on the site. So you'll get right now our advertisers are American Express Open and Comcast. And Google and Dell, they all signed up in the first 2 weeks. It was instantly very successful in terms of, you know, big advertisers that wanted to reach this market. But if you're a private company and you're incorporated, we have someone here who's working Part of their job is to get those press releases distributed. So, okay, somebody listening to this, if you have a private company, go register on inkbiznet.com, put up your press release, and within 5 minutes you'll see it on the homepage, not just of inkbiznet.com, but ink.com. Your press release will be on the homepage of ink.com. So that's pretty cool. It's totally in the hands of the users.
Wow, Same thing. I have to do something press-worthy.
Yeah.
Let's just get the URL out there for people. It's inkbiznet, I-N-C...
biz.net.com.
Not inkbiz.net. Inkbiznet.com. inkbiznet.com.
Yeah, there was like Ink Business Network.
Right.
That actually works also. Inkbusinessnetwork.com works too.
How very professional of you.
Yeah. There was some blog, I can't remember. There was some media blog last week said, cool idea, lame name. Well, I like the name, but it's kind of an ordinary name, but it gets the message across. And you can get your, as a private company owner, same thing with your blog. You want your blog to be distributed on every page of ink.com. Go to InkBiznet, create a profile, start blogging. Your blog gets distributed on a feed throughout ink.com, and then we're working on expanding that feed so that it also includes regular blog network. So it'll include all of our regular partners. We have a lot of work to go, but the basic group functionality is also present so that we're organizing the business managers. And you don't have to be an owner. You can be anybody who works for a private company, anybody who's helping to manage a private company can join. And so we're setting up regional groups in New York and Philadelphia and everywhere else, and then also industry groups, retail groups, et cetera. And the group structure that's there now is pretty basic. It's got, topics and an event calendar, and we're going to be making it much more robust. But the cool thing is I have two, full-time people who are community managers whose job it is to interact with the business owners, anybody, or the business managers, and come up with great events and great discussion topics and really make it a vibrant living community. And we've been doing, I think I mentioned, we've been doing conferences and events for a long time here. And we've had this one conference with Inc. going for 28 years. So we get to meet these people all the time. And I think what this is going to spawn is lots and lots and lots of small regional groups and events on the Inc. side. So we'll give the people who are company owners in Philadelphia or Akron an easier way to find each other and meet. So there's that aspect to it as well. There's the networking aspect, and then there's the sort of directory database aspect. So that's a pretty cool business. And then there's the whole Fast Company business, which I think is even more dramatic. I think it shows off more of the fun stuff you can do with Drupal. That's my – what do you think? Jeff and James does. from a Drupal standpoint, Inc. versus InkBiznet versus Fast Company. What do you think was more interesting?
I think there's a lot of really exciting stuff that's going into the Fast Company site. We were just talking before the podcast about some of the stuff that it's doing, and it's combining a lot of the functionality that's been there in social networking sites like LinkedIn and Facebook and stuff like that, in terms of being able to set up like robust personal profiles with lots of information that you can use to sort of put your public face out there and connect with other users. But it's also an actual like media company website where there's magazine content that's being published and all this actual original content that's being published on the site. And then there's also networking groups and stuff like that where you can actually connect with other people with different interests and join in ongoing conversations. It's interesting because it's all different pieces that have been built on various Drupal sites at different times, but never I at least I'm not aware of any other sites that combine those different facets together into a single entity.
And this is fastcompany.com.
Right.
Is it launched on Drupal yet?
No, not yet.
Okay,
no.
So we're talking about a site that people can't actually see yet. But no, it's going to be cool.
It's going to be cool. No, it's in beta, and I suppose probably the first or second week of December we'll go to a private beta. It'll be easy to find it because we'll invite people right from the homepage of Fast Company. Or you can just register for Company of Friends right now. And as soon as the beta is ready, you'll get invited to join it. And then it'll be in beta through December and launch in January. The secret sauce is kind of a personal profile, because on the personal profile, instead of just managing what your contacts are doing and what your groups are, you're getting a feed of all of the information that's occurring in the Fast Company and world arranged by your interests. So you set up a personal profile, you tell us your preferences, and then you start getting feeds of, say, stories that are about technology on Fast Company and member blogs that are about design, because we talk about how design works in business. So you might get member blogs about design, and you might get you can subscribe to feeds and blogs that we recommend from around the web, and it all kind of it appears on your personal profile page. And just to get into the why this is different from LinkedIn or even Facebook, it's letting our business users get to know each other based on the quality and content of their ideas, instead of just their resumes. So I don't know. I use LinkedIn. I use LinkedIn as kind of a contact management service, and that's how I've heard Reid Hoffman, the founder, describe it. It's like a personal contact management service. And so if I'm searching around for resumes, or I want to find somebody I can go pitch an idea to, that's great. But if I really want to get in depth with interacting with somebody, one of the best ways to do it is to, say, read their blog and read what they have to say about what their favorite articles are, and read what they have to say about what they have to say in groups that they belong to. And so this is what we do, is organize somebody's profile page around the content that they're creating. So every profile page is very – everything you ever do on the site or anything that you contribute to your profile ends up on your personal profile. And so when people check you out, they're checking out you as like a publisher. And we'll distribute your blog around the Fast Company site and to the wide world as well. But it's also a place where when you interact with other members, they're getting to know you very well. So we'd rather have a million people doing that, getting to know each other and interacting on a deeper level of engagement, then have 30 million people with these very loose connections, which is what you have on LinkedIn. So it's a tighter network. It'll probably be much smaller to begin with, but there'll be much deeper engagement. That's the hope. That's the goal for FastCompany.com.
So these are two very complicated Drupal sites that you're building or have built. Let's talk a little bit about the process of how that happened. You know, first of all, so what was your timeline with these? Oh. I know they both went quite quickly.
Well, let's see. So we wrapped our wireframes in about the end of March, early April 2007, and then we started looking around, and I think maybe we started looking a little earlier in March, and I think we were probably building, April, May, we were probably building by about June. So June, July, August, September, so we were live in a very early beta at one of our conferences in September, so it took, about 4.5 months, and then we went 5.5 months, we were actually live with the public beta. So Inc. BizNet is not – it's in beta, but anybody can use it right now. And we're hoping to launch in mid-December with the beta of Fast Company. So what's that about? 7 months. And both were being worked on June, July, August, September, October, November. So, yeah, about 7 months. So it's an ongoing process, though, because as we found out, there's – launching the sites, and then there's, I don't know what you want to call it. You can call it enhancing the functionality, or you can call it squashing the bugs,
right.
bug fixing, but we have you know, Ink Bizna is launched, but we have probably 200 things that we, when I say 200, I literally mean 200. We probably have 200 bug fixes that are in our queue for Ink Biznet, and Fast Company's not even launched, and I already know we're I already know we have hundreds of bug fixes that will be around after we launch. So
was it Mark Twain who said a great website is never finished?
That's right. It was Mark Twain.
I think that was Mark Twain. He had a lot of really good quotes about websites.
Yes. No. So I mean, depending on for me, it's felt like a long time. So because I had that whole 6 months of doing the wireframes and the concepts, and then another 6 or 7 months of the actual build. But I think for the developers who've been involved, it's felt like a freight train, because we're trying to push through so many complicated sites and two sites at the same time, that are very, very different. So they've just probably, I mean, we can talk about that, but we've had lots and lots and lots of developers working on this.
So, who's helped you out, and in what capacity?
So the heavy lifting is being done by a company called Achieve Internet out of San Diego, and that's Chris Fuller and Ron Huber's shop. And Lullabot is doing did a lot of the architecture review, performance review, security review, and some difficult custom modules that maybe James and Jeff can talk about, and then just helping us review the custom modules in general that Achieve is doing. We've got some great help from Advomatic. And Advomatic is doing some administrative tools for us, because there's a whole lot of stuff that our editors are going to have to use on the back end in order to every day be processing and choosing and curating from dozens of different types of content. So Advomatic is building some great back end tools, which I've heard really great things about. A shop in New York called Treehouse is doing our theming work. And then we've had some really terrific freelancers helping us with project management. And then we have our own internal shop, which, again, they're PHP guys. They didn't know, and a gal who didn't know anything about Drupal to start with, but you guys have also been helping us. You came in. Jeff and James came in. We've done some seminars on a seminar on Drupal. You guys have been here for some other theming seminars as well. Your regular theming seminar you did up in our office, so we had our developers sit through that.
And I have to say, your office is awesome. I don't know how to work that into the podcast as a question, but it should just be mentioned that where exactly are your offices located, and what's the story behind the building that you're in?
So we're in Seven World Trade Center. Seven World Trade Center is the first new development in the World Trade Center complex. I guess the insurance settlement came through first on this building, so they were able to put it up first. And it opened up in April. And it's like a 60-story office building that's all glass. And we had a full floor. We have a full floor that was gut construction, so we could do anything we wanted with. And we hired some fancy architects, and we spent a year on this also. And our owner wanted to have a showcase site to kind of show that we were a very prominent media company in New York. Interior and exterior glass. So as the offices on the exterior have all glass walls, floor to ceiling, there's very little in here that isn't glass. So the light passes through to the interior. And then interior, there aren't any walls at all. So as you walk around, we're up on the 29th floor, and the floors are very, very high. I don't know, probably 20 feet. Are they 20 feet? Maybe 15 or 18 feet. I don't know. They're high. So we're really high up here, and we have a 360 view from lower Manhattan. So You can see across to New Jersey and up to Midtown, and it's pretty – because it's all glass and because as you walk around, the views are unobstructed. It's pretty spectacular. And then it's got all this, you know, spiffy minimalist architecture and so it's dramatic. The unfortunate thing about it is that, you know, vendors like Lullabot walk in and think we've got money. It's not true.
Well, it's pretty to look at whether or not there is money.
It's not true. It's all tax rebates.
Smoke and mirrors.
Right, it's all glass. Do you know we're the ones who aren't supposed to be throwing stones, right? So it's a nice work environment.
Yeah. And you actually hosted a Drupal meetup there or two, haven't you?
We've done two Drupal meetups, and then we had your theming.
Workshop, yeah.
The space we've, you know, as we became involved in the Drupal community, we immediately it became obvious to us that this is a close knit community, and you have to give as much as you take. So an office is an easy thing for us to give. We have really 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 nice conference space. So we just are happy to let any of the Drupal groups come by and use it. So that's the getting ourselves known in the Drupal community is going to be really important to our success, because we really need, you know, even if you're, it doesn't matter if you work for us or not, if we're relying on your module, we want to be nice to you, you know?
Right.
So we can get into that discussion, but it has to do with we've embraced that Drupal philosophy of open source in general, philosophy of giving back and sharing with the community and letting, you know, maybe again Jeff and James can talk about that, but I think you already built something pretty nifty that you thought on Inc. BizNet that you thought would be a big help
Go ahead.
Sorry. Jeff's having trouble with his mute button.
Sorry about that. No. Actually, one of the initial things, though, when we started looking at these detailed wireframes that had been put together for both the Inc. BizNet and Fast Company sites, was that the user profile about you, you know, sign up process was very, very different than Drupal's traditional enter your email address, you know, get a confirmation mail back, and then you can come in and like tell us your name. You know, I mean, Drupal tends to be very minimalist in its profiles, but the Inc. BizNet and Fast Company sites needed a very rich, like, you know, LinkedIn, you know, style, you know, process where you could go through and put together lots and lots of detailed, rich information about yourself and your company and, you know, your background and interests and all kinds of stuff, so that, you know, for networking and connecting with other people, you could, you know, do all that cool stuff. One of the pieces of functionality that we put together was something that we called Node Cluster. Basically, it lets you define collections of nodes or collections of node types that will be treated as a sort of step-by-step workflow, so that somebody can go in and edit, say, a personal profile node cluster and be taken through a step-by-step process of creating all the individual nodes that make up that sort of personal cloud of information. And it keeps track of the metadata necessary to keep all of those different pieces together and associated with each other, and to go through them as sort of a chain rather than just various, you know, manually created individual pieces of content. A lot of that functionality that's actually in place, you know, if people, you know, look at the Inc. BizNet and, you know, Fast Company sites, and when the Fast Company site launches, those are being used on those. There's probably some additional steps that would be necessary to get it ready for, like, general public consumption, because, you know, anything that's built, you know, for a given website's launch has got some assumptions in it. But the core of the functionality for that, I think it's a piece that hasn't really been there in the Drupal code in the Drupal code world so far. And it's something that a lot of people are starting to try to move towards as they build more complex social networking sites. And I think when it's ready for prime time, I think it'll be really exciting.
Yeah, I just want to second that for Drupal people that, yeah, the profiles on both Inc. BizNet and Fast Company are actually made up of collections of different node types. So each section of the profile kind of has a different node type associated with it that has all the various fields associated with that section of their profile. So it's pretty neat. But essentially the node cluster just ties together the various node types as part of the profile. So it's kind of a nice example of where just a little bit of extra code, you know, brings existing pieces together. And the other thing I want to stress also on the Drupal end is that, you know, while there is a bunch of custom stuff and new exciting stuff happening for both sites, there's also a whole lot of both sites that are, you know, essentially Drupal with CCK and Views.
Groups.
And organic groups, yeah. Both sites make heavy use of organic groups, to manage both the company groups on Inc. BizNet, as well as, you know, the topic related groups on both sites. So, I mean, biased opinion, but I think Drupal's proved to be a good choice in terms of, you know, the amount of stuff that's been able to just kind of come together with the off the shelf pieces, so to speak.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think that, it would have been impossible to have, built this within this time frame with just say PHP or Java. There's just no way we could have. So this, you know, the off the shelf stuff is really what's accelerated the process. And having Achieve and Lullabot to really advise us on what we should use from the contributions of the Drupal community has been but that's been the reason we were able to get this together in just a little over half a year.
It seems like you're really sort of embracing the whole zeitgeist of Drupal. I mean, the fact that you're starting to sort of do things like host the Drupal meetups at your offices, or just sort of invest in invest in time in just trying to understand the community and grow the community in your area, which of course is New York City.
It's New York.
Not a small task. Not something that needs doing per se, but I don't know. I mean, compared to maybe San Francisco or something, I think that the New York Drupal people were a little more, well, I think they're maybe a little bit more business focused to some extent. I think that there was less people coming out to Drupal meetups and more people just sort of using it at the office. It seems like you're sort of doing what you can to try and sort of bring some vibrance into that as well.
Well, I mean, one of the things I want to mention is that we're going to be hiring a bunch of developers. So
that helps the community too, doesn't it?
Yeah. So we've got four guys in house, and one of them, the guy we just hired named Michael Krakowski, is a been doing Drupal for the past couple of years at an outfit called Stromberg. So we just hired Michael, and we're going to hire I think three and possibly four more Drupal developers, or we'll just hire PHP people and train them to become Drupal developers. But the idea is that we won't just have this shop where we give instructions. We do want to the developers, here's what you got to do, and then tell us when it's done. It's a we did, as we got to be more familiar with the open source community, become also enamored of agile development. And actually, agile is a metaphor for running our entire business. So defining defining sprints and then working through short sprints and then redefining at the end of the sprint what we like, what we don't like, and moving on to the next sprint. And we run scrums, and as we run our scrums, we make sure that our developers have well, it's not a seat at the table because we stand during our scrums, but they have a place to stand during the scrum. So it's that relates to sort of the philosophy of hearing the developers' voices as part of the process and not being, you know, not assuming that this, to me, this is so the way we developed this was a little bit of a mistake in that the only thing we did wrong, and really it's costing us in terms of development time. The only thing we did wrong is if we could have chosen a platform as we were doing the wireframes, then we could have saved a whole lot of time. For example, this module already does that. So do it this way and you can do it really fast. And we wouldn't have had to have thought through entire processes, you know, from scratch. It would have saved us a tremendous amount of time. Or, you know, even if there wasn't something existing, to just sort of speculate about where something could fit in that was, or so-and-so was working on this, you know.
Did you find a lot of that sort of come in conflict where you'd already planned it out for a module to work a given way and it was working another way? And how did you sort of reconcile those two different ways that things were working?
It happened a bunch, and the way I usually reconciled it was just to say to do it the Drupal way. Usually there were some exceptions. The trouble is, you know, you have all these interdependencies. So as soon as you say, I'll give you, I don't know whether this is a good example or not, but anyway, when there's a registration layer where in order to say answer a question that's posed by our editors, there's a sort of a microblogging little tool, and in order to answer that question, you have to be registered. And the first time you answer the question, if you aren't registered, it the way we had envisioned it, there was going to be a pop-up or something done in Ajax that actually looked like a new layer. And as I understand it, the way the easier way on Drupal actually just took you to a new page. And so when you arrive at this new page, you can no longer see the underlying layer, which is a little bit disconcerting psychologically because you might have just written this eloquent answer to a question and now you're taken to a registration page, and in the back of your mind you might be thinking, is that even still there? Did I just lose what I wrote? And so, you know, we were told this is very difficult and this would take a few weeks to fix, and since we're racing through development, we don't really lose all that much by just going to the new page and then saying, okay, at the end of that page, we'll then send you back to where you started. But, you know, that is one of those examples where we just did it the easier way. And maybe Jeff and James, I actually don't know technically what happened there, why that was so much easier one way than the other. I'm not sure we would have done it differently when we wireframed, but I think if we had at least known what was easy and what was hard, it would have helped us with the planning process a little bit better. That's one of those examples where, you know, it's just kind of you want a developer at the table the whole time,
right?
You know,
right? Just to give you some pointers in the right direction. Yeah, the thing I always say with Drupal is that the hard stuff is easy, but oftentimes the easy stuff is hard, and it's hard to sort of figure out which are going to fall into which category. Definitely. I'm always curious to hear how people have reconciled those things.
Right. So I, you know, generally we're reconciling in favor of Drupal, and then what we're going to do is circle back after the launch and then decide one piece at a time, whether it's we like the way it's working or whether we want to go back and do it the way we originally had planned it, even though it's going to require more customization. That layers thing, I'm pretty sure we're going to circle back and do it the way we originally forecast, because I just know it's going to be jarring for people to lose what they were working on, for it to be out of sight.
Right. On that note of customization, I mean, what, and maybe James or Jeff, you might be the ones to answer this, but like, how much custom coding is in the site versus what's either been used directly out of the Drupal contrib repository or contributed back to Drupal?
I'm not even going to say anything.
There's quite a bit of custom code, but for the most part, it's things like exposing the views that have been built and designed for the site. It's a huge number of custom views that go into the site. It's driven primarily via CCK and views for almost everything. A lot of the custom code that's in there is just purely for managing like workflows and business rules and validation stuff that's custom to, you know, what's specific about that site. And to that extent, the amount of custom code is just sort of a reflection of how much functionality is there in the site and like what the specific needs are for, you know, how people are going to interact and stuff like that. There's a huge list of contrib modules that are in there. Things like My Site for doing customized, you know, user home pages, OG views, and CCK, and the whole cloud of additional modules on top of views and CCK that usually come along to do different customized presentation pieces and stuff like that. There aren't that many. There isn't a lot of custom code that was written just for the site. Other than like back-end administration tools, that node cluster stuff that we were talking about, and then some different components that Achieve Internet has built from scratch for, you know, integrating with different in-house tools that Mansueto Digital uses to manage their workflows and, you know, their advertising systems and stuff like that. So there's a lot of custom work, but it's mostly the integration and workflow and business rules type stuff that any site has to have.
It's certainly sort of a classic, I don't know if it's an error, it's sort of a danger, I think, that a lot of large sites like this will just end up creating a whole lot of custom stuff and essentially, you know, hacking core Drupal and just starting to make it do what they want it to do, which is certainly one way of, like I said, sort of reconciling, you know, it doing what it does versus what you want it to do. But of course, then when the next version of Drupal comes out, and it looks like we're only, you know, months away from Drupal 6 coming out. How do you deal with that? Do you all feel like the site's in pretty good shape for those kind of things? Or I'm sure that the idea of upgrading a site from one version of Drupal to the next is never anything that anyone looks at with like excitement per se, but.
Yeah, there will always be a fair bit of work involved. But I think, you know, like Jeff was saying, the approach here has been use as many kind of off the shelf pieces as possible. And that's why, you know, the custom code that's been written isn't, you know, entire new features and things. It's largely, you know, kind of glue code to glue the existing pieces together. So those, you know, maintaining those things, you know, there's no, you know, when Drupal 6 comes out and when that upgrade procedure starts, there's no, you know, major chunk of the site where you have to rewrite everything. You know, it's a matter of making sure that the, you know, any API changes in order to keep the business logic code intact. But a lot of the custom code has been, again, around, you know, integrating with some of the back end tools and integrating with things like, you know, the contact importer tool that's being used and the actual publishing system for the magazine content on Fast Company and things like that. So Yeah, it's, you know, I mean, upgrading versions of Drupal is always, you know, a fair bit of work, but there's no, you know, there aren't, you know, tons of, you know, big sections of code that have been, you know, hacked or removed or, you know, heavily altered or things like that. There's, you know, a whole lot of, form alter implementations and things like that. So
this site runs on form alter.
Yeah.
So Ed, how's your like overall Drupal experience been? I mean, again, you're still in the process. It doesn't seem right to sort of do a retrospective, but are you bullish on Drupal still?
Yeah, no, we're very bullish on Drupal. I've been very impressed about how much you can do with Drupal without us having to build enormous amounts of functionality from scratch. So our wireframes were so we had two sets of wireframes that are 150 pages long that are thick with annotations as to how things should run, and then to really have to only build a handful of things completely from scratch, and most of it is integration work. I mean, that really says a lot for how robust Drupal is and how much the contributors are doing, how flexible it is, and how it's almost anything we thought of. Somebody had already done work around. So that's all very, very impressive. There's a lot that has to be done in terms of making it look and feel exactly the way we want it to look and feel, and so that the user interface and the language that the users are exposed to, we're very, very sensitive to that. So we've had to spend a lot of time, customizing all of that and rewriting all of the language, and of course all of the theming that's been very intense. But that's to be expected. I mean, we've gotten a lot of mileage out of the core Drupal, and I'm looking forward to being able to do very, very rapid development, rolling out new features ahead of or at the same time as our competitive our new set of competitors, that's basically Facebook and LinkedIn, are core competitors for Fast Company. So being able, I think we're very, very well positioned to look out into the world of what's happening in social networking and the community space, and we intend, it's a little bit up in the air, but I think sometime in 2008 the intention is to migrate all of our content management system, which is now under a proprietary piece of software called Fatwire that the New York Times runs off of, as well as hundreds of other publishers, and we'll probably take all of that, and that's what we use to manage the magazine content. We'll move all of that to Drupal as well, so we will have the whole team and everything just working on Drupal, and we won't need to. The developers will only have to think about Drupal; they won't have to also think about mastering Fatwire as well. So, the robustness of it, I'm very, very impressed with. I come from a background where everything I'd ever wanted to do with a website before had been comparatively much, much easier than this, but that's only because I'd never done anything quite on this scale before. So it's been tremendous. It's been a tremendous undertaking of a year. And there's many months of work to get things really smooth.
Well, it's fascinating that anyone would be building a Drupal site where you would really consider your competitors to be LinkedIn and Facebook, and that was the way that you're competing. I mean, it's really exciting, very exciting.
Well, we have a business strategy which happy to tell people about, because I don't see how anyone else is going to – well, anyway, so the business strategy is that because we're on Drupal, we'll be able to network our site with anybody – any other site that's using Drupal, or in fact, even if they're not using Drupal, the idea is just that we'll be able to network together with similar sites or similar organizations that will want to share membership and groups with us. I can't name them, but we're talking to a bunch of different organizations, and we're talking about helping them either build a Drupal site or using us as an ASP so that we'll run a site for them. And so if we take a number of organizations and large publishers that are all each of us has 500,000, a million and a half, you know, we have 1.5 million users. If you put together 4 or 5 and we each decide to run our own networks for our organizations, but the membership base can find each other no matter which site they're on, and I know you guys are thinking about and working on some OpenID stuff, and we very much support that because I'd like people to be able to take their profiles wherever they go. But we can relatively quickly get to 6, 8, 10 million professionals and businesses in a community. So, you know, it took LinkedIn a few years to get there. We should be able to get there pretty quickly if 5 or 6 publishers and organizations want to work together with us. That's the idea. Now, we're going to keep our niche as business. So we're not going to attempt to be Facebook, which is all things for all people at this point. So, but Facebook also has a good user base in there of people who are promoting their business interests and engaging in a business conversation. There's a Web 2.0 entrepreneurs group that I belong to. That's a very good group. So we want to provide an alternate to that, and we want to provide a place where, you know, it's separate from their Facebook identity, and it's separate from that. You know, that's a jumble of your personal interests, and you play Scrabble with some people on Facebook, and you poke other people, and it's fun. And I use Facebook all the time. But our idea is, here's a place where, you know, here's your business face, and here's your business discussions, and here's where you can find business colleagues. And even if it's just Fast Company or just Inc. Business, you can engage in really good conversations with people and find people who are interested in business topics and interact with our editors and our writers very easily. At first it sounds a little crazy or unrealistic, but we're already starting with 1.5 million, 1.6 million people who come every month, and all I have to do is, and we're finding a lot of interest from our fellow publishers and business organizations who just want to join in and not necessarily, you know, do their own thing, but also work together so that we form a larger network. So I think, you know, Drupal is great for that, because it's like we're not trying to own their platform. We're just trying to provide a way that, you know, they can build their own platform any way they want, or we can help them now that we've gone through this process of thinking through how a site works with for business professionals. We can help them. It's not, you know, I don't really care if they put together their own Drupal team or let us facilitate that process for them. What's important to me is that we link together our networks and that we let people move their profiles around pretty easily. Right. So that's
ultimately, I guess it can sort of make the technology relatively transparent, and really where your competitive advantages or disadvantages are is in the content and the functionality that you're providing.
That's right. That's where I think it should be. I don't think you know, you should go to LinkedIn because it's the only game in town. You should go because you like the community and you like what the media or the publishing organization or the website is doing for you to help you find and do what you want. So I think that there's open source and Drupal in particular make that possible. If we had to do this with a proprietary platform and then go around trying to pitch everybody on getting involved in our proprietary platform, there's no way we'd be able to execute on this vision.
Right.
It's just people wouldn't buy into it because they'd think, well, the same thing that I think about People Aggregator, which like, well, that sounds great, but what if you guys aren't around? How can I rely on you? Here was just kind of like, well, you start with thousands of Drupal developers, and whether or not you believe in us, you're at least going to have a great Drupal platform, and it's going to work for your site. And plus, you get to network together with us. So we're in the position of not just liking Drupal for ourselves, but we're hitting the road, and we're going to be trying to sell a lot of other major sites and organizations on using Drupal. So that's why I think we have an important role to play with Drupal developers and in the Drupal community.
Cool. Well, let's talk a little bit about the hardware aspect of things. I know that's something that people are always really curious about when you're talking about particularly Drupal sites of this scale, of which there are few. They're getting to be more, but there aren't that many. What type of server infrastructure do you have running for all of this?
I'm going to punt that over to James, who I think... probably knows more about it than me, but
yeah,
I think.
So as is kind of common in the larger scale sites, I'm on the spot. I'm going to forget. It's either two or three load balanced web servers with right now a single database master with a hot spare failover. So that makes five-ish servers plus a file server to serve up the uploaded content and whatnot. So, yeah, I mean,
talking about web server hardware is like talking about motorcycles. It's that same sort of part of your brain. It's, I guess, maybe that's me. It's sort of like, oh wow, cool, sounds fast.
Yeah. It's fast, and it's my job to make it faster. So, yeah. But very, very typical to the architecture that, Drupal.org itself uses, and a lot of the sites that are doing up in this, you know, kind of level of traffic and stuff. So, yeah.
How could and how will that scale, with traffic?
So yeah, the reason why it's such a popular kind of architecture is because it utilizes, you know, what's called horizontal scaling, in that, you know, rather than having to buy bigger machines and try to migrate from one machine to another, which would be, you know, vertical scaling, you just add more of the same in. So by having a load balanced web tier, if the web servers, the Apache servers that are, you know, doing all the parsing and crunching on the PHP code, if those start to get bogged down, we can easily, you know, without downtime, throw in, you know, more servers into the mix, and things like that. So, that's the plan. And then of course, the other thing that, you know, anybody who follows Lullabot articles closely, we're big users and fans of Memcache for caching. So, you know, the other kind of scaling tactic is looking at, you know, what bits we can cache out, which of course is far more interesting in the, you know, working with these social networks where, you know, majority of the traffic isn't necessarily anonymous users, which you can cache very aggressively with. You know, you have to look at caching, you know, per user and things like that, and being much more careful with the caching strategy. So it's interesting from a kind of performance and scalability point of view.
That's actually one of the ways where Drupal swappable caching architecture can be a really big boon, because behind the scenes there's a lot of stuff that just goes into, quote, the cache system, which by default is you know, just more stuff being put into the database, which helps sometimes, but on a really high load site, you're still pounding the database server a lot. And moving the entire cache infrastructure over to Memcached can have quite a big impact, not just for anonymous users, but even for registered users who are going around when caching is used cleanly.
I'm telling you, it's like exciting, like a motorcycle. Maybe I should just get a motorcycle, really.
How old are you, Jeff?
Old enough to know better.
Are we flirting with a midlife crisis?
So Ed, let's talk about your hiring. There are a lot of people that listen to the podcast that prick up their ears whenever anyone's saying that. Let's get your email address out there and find out where people can find out more information.
They can just go ahead and email me directly. So I'm esussman@inc.com. esussman@inc.com. And our technology director, Paul Mariana, will probably give you a ring back. You can also you can also call Paul directly if you would like. That's how we are open. We just give out phone numbers here.
They haven't figured out how to spam scrape the audio podcasts quite yet. So.
It's 212-389-5367, and we're looking for we have three or four open slots. We would hire someone of utmost seniority, and we would hire someone who's just getting started but has a lot of PHP experience and is very interested in Drupal and wants to be trained. I think we'll have seven in-house Drupal developers, which will make us a pretty big Drupal shop. It should be fun for anybody who wants that, you know, not have a lonely Drupal existence, but get to work in a big glass tower with other Drupal developers.
Yeah, and did we mention the office is gorgeous?
Yeah, the office is gorgeous, and you know, we're a big media company, so we get to pay competitive wages, and you can Drupal till you drop here. You know,
I like that.
Drupal till you drop.
Oh yeah.
Cool. Well,
I smell a t-shirt.
Anything else to add, Ed?
No, I think that's it. Everybody I've met so far has been really interesting and intense. Well, not everybody's been intense, but I've met a range of people, from very intense people to people who are very interesting to have long conversations with. It's been a great community. I think the people who are drawn to open source and Drupal are an interesting bunch, and it's been one of the you have a choice between hiring some Drupal people and some .NET people. Hire the Drupal people. They're more fun. They're more fun. Why would you
There's a T-shirt in that somewhere. I don't know.
Right. That's so. I've been really happy with that, and stay tuned. There's some. If you came here and you got here, we'd have bugs for you to fix and work modules for you to integrate till your heart was content. You know, you get to live your dream of Drupal right here.
Live in the dream.
Live your dream. Yeah. Ride your virtual motorcycle.
Right. Right.
Cool. Well, thanks for coming on the podcast, Ed. And it was cool. I hope you get some bites on that work. And if anybody has questions for Ed, feel free to post them on the podcast, comments, and we'll have Ed come back and answer some inappropriate questions, or maybe some appropriate questions. Cool. Well, thanks, Ed. Take care.
Okay, guys. Thanks a lot.
All right, bye-bye.
Thanks a lot, Ed.